welcome to the NDB Sunday Show with me, Christine, and United States intelligence analyst, retired Colonel Chris Wyatt. Welcome, Colonel.
Chris, thank you. Oh, what a year. Let's unpack it.
Thank you for getting up so early, but I think as somebody who is a frequent visitor to South Africa, somebody who spends so much time on the continent, and really an old Africa hand, somebody who's advised the National Security Council on South Africa, that you are in a good position to answer my questions today.
Well, I hope so. Let's see how it goes. I'll try to keep score here.
Let's look at South Africa domestically first. Not least of all, the Matlanga Commission of Inquiry and Parliament's Ad Hoc Committee into allegations of police and state capture. Not state capture. Political capture. Sorry.
Well, the Matlanga Commission for many South Africans is shocking. For others, it's not shocking. They paid attention to the events over the years. And the rot that seems to have set in at the highest levels of governance, particularly in law enforcement, is gobsmacking. It's disturbing. First off, Mkhwanazi came out with these allegations. The senior police officer in KwaZulu-Natal said, these people are involved in all this stuff and these different things and criminal activity. They're tied to gangsters. And initially we heard dismissals. Oh, no, that's nonsense. That's not true. Who is he? What is he talking about? Well, the public pressure, this is one instance where it appears that public pressure forced the government to do something about it. The public really responded to this. We're really upset about this. It was quite honest. It was refreshing to see that the public had an influence to get the government to actually respond. So they appointed this commission, and oh my goodness, then the testimony coming out of the commission, I mean, it's not bad. It's worse than you could ever imagine. This is unbelievably, I mean, basically, you know, it appears to me outside that government officials are involved in assassinations, basically by helping gangsters, you know, get information and take people out. And so many of these odd killings we've seen recently, including this poor young guy, Armand Swart, who had nothing to do with anything, who was murdered, mistakenly assassinated or executed by these hitmen because they thought he was a whistleblower for the Transnet debacle. And then, of course, this all goes back to Babita Diakaran, her being taken out. And now just most recently see that that Marius van der Merwe was taken out by a hit team. And they claim they've got some suspects in mind, but it's beyond comprehension how bad. There's a reason why the Federal Bureau of Investigation was created in the United States for exactly this reason. We had to create the FBI back in the 1930s because we had such criminality from gangsters, which came out of the Prohibition era when alcohol was made illegal. So it created a niche market for criminality. And there's a niche market in criminality in South Africa, and it all starts, in my view, with BEE. It all gets linked to that and then the lack of law enforcement. But it's pretty shocking what's happening in this commission. And there's probably a lot more that we're going to find out before this thing is over. But my biggest concern here is, will we find more out? Because if you're busy intimidating and executing witnesses, we've got a serious problem.
And now our justice minister was mooting the idea that hearings should be held in camera.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the problem here too. The public is not going to stand for that. The public is not going to stand for these things being done in secret because the trust level is already abysmally low with the government and it's across the board. And people like to attribute these things to specific groups of South Africans who are skeptical, but black, white, and brown South Africans are very skeptical about what's going on. If you try to do this in private, there will be massive protests that will spring up. Some will be organized by opposition parties, others by civic groups, and others will just organically rise. This is not something the government can afford to do. If they actually care about governance in South Africa and about South Africans, this needs to be done in the open. Sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Now, Colonel, I'm sure you have seen rumors that one political party might be planning, for want of a better word, a coup.
Which one? There are talks of several of them, but the other question is, you know, does the GNU survive? It appears it's going to survive too, but I mean, that's itself we can get into in a little bit. But yeah, it's there's all kinds of strange things happening. I don't know if we're referring to Mkhonto Sizwe party, but Mkhonto Sizwe seems to be a vanity project coalesced around Jacob Zuma. And in my view, once Jacob Zuma's left the scene in whichever way, politically, or he's moved on from this existence, that party will disintegrate. It is a party full of nepotism, total chaos and corruption, and it's just a disaster. And now they're recruiting, their senior people are recruiting mercenaries to fight in Russia. It's really bizarre.
At the same time, there's been a plot to try and get rid of President Cyril Ramaphosa before the end of his term, but that seems to have fallen flat a bit.
Now, that might be the coup you're talking about inside the ANC. I wasn't even thinking about that. Yeah, look, the ANC's got a lot. I could run that out for half an hour saying a lot of problems, and they're all self-inflicted. They're all own goals, and they really have had this problem for number of years. And this goes back to the first big rift in the party when Thabo Mbeki was unseated at Polokwane at that conference, 15, 18 years ago, whenever it was, about that time frame. So it goes all the way back to then. And this rift has continued to become wider and wider. The party allowed itself to become a party that was based on patronage and deploying their caterers that weren't qualified, but they're loyal to the Tuli House. And that brought a rot into a party that just got worse and worse like a cancer. And over time, the negligence and neglect of that have created a situation which you have different factions and they're fighting for supremacy in the ANC. And while they're doing that, the country is falling apart. They're not focusing on governance the way they should. And they don't get the message. Even now, with less than 50% of the vote, historically, the 2024 national elections, the ANC still thinks they run the country. They basically run the country because the coalition, grand coalition they have, just sort of lets them. They let them get away with it. They have a plurality, not a majority, and they still do what they want to do. And we could talk about Bella and about NHI and about expropriation on compensation, all things that are part of the National Democratic Revolution desire to change fundamentally South Africa, and not for the better, by the way. And those things have all come on board with the government of National Unity, with these other parties involved. It's not just the ANC. So they're doing what they want to do, and it's not going well for South Africans.
On to the continent, South Africa's role, not least of all the military disasters in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Well, South Africa's been involved in the DRC throughout this century. They've had troops deployed there throughout the century. And of course, they've been very active deploying troops ever since President Mandela came into office. They've sent troops to Ethiopia for advisors to that conflict, Ethiopia-Eritrea. They've sent troops in the Central African Republic, into Comoros multiple times, into Lesotho back in the 1990s a couple of times. They've also got, as I said, troops in the DRC, Burundi. I don't think I mentioned that one. They had a VIP unit there for a long time, plus peacekeepers. The DRC thing is really a long-term thing. They've been there for over 20 years, off and on, and it's been a problematic situation. It's arguable that the South African troops have had any positive impact whatsoever in the DRC. In fact, this year, we've seen a very negative impact. They're chased away, forced to withdraw by rebels, and chased out of the country. It's a complete debacle. And then the troops are trapped. They can't even get out. And if you watch the video of the South African troops engaging those coming at them, you sit there and shake your head. Who trained these people? They're just like, pointing guns wildly at people and shooting. There's no fire discipline. There appears to be, in some of the videos I've seen, perhaps one NCO that actually knows what they're doing. Well, these troops are just, I don't know who trains them, but it's really a sad situation. And right now, I think the Lesotho Defense Force could probably defeat the South African National Defense Force if they came across the border. Honestly, that's not much of a stretch. I know the BDF could beat them from Botswana, but it's just pretty frightening, the state of decay. But it's a consequence of decades of neglect for the South African National Defense Force, which gets less than 1% of GDP and declining. You can't maintain a military, let alone improve it, with that level of underfunding.
Same with the Navy.
Well, yeah. In fact, the Navy got the famous arms deal, which we're waiting for a trial for Jacob Zuma, still 2.5 decades later. The famous arms deal, the South Africans got Gripen fighters from Sweden, advanced, wonderful interceptors. They also got Hawk lead-in fighter trainers. They got Type 209 diesel submarines from Germany and three cruisers or frigates or whatever you want to call them. Different people call them different things, but they're medium-sized naval ships. And they pretty much sit in harbor. The submarines can't even go out anymore. They're all sidelined. There's only two operational Gripens, which is great, except there's only one qualified pilot last time I checked. So I guess that pilot flies one, takes a break, flies the other one, so it gets airtime. But it's a disaster and across the board, Air Force, Army, and the Navy as well. The South African military cannot perform its primary mission, and that's to patrol the waters around South Africa. They can't do that. The U.S. Navy has a better presence around the Horn of Africa, and we don't go there very much than the South African Navy does. It's kind of sad.
I don't think U.S. President Donald Trump will be in any mood to defend South Africa. So let's move on to international relations, or diplomatic relations, as the South African government would still like to call it.
Well, oy vey. look, Chris, I sat down and tried to take a few notes to prepare for our conversation today, and I just went back to January, and I'm like, oh, it started. I mean, it's like someone lit the veld fire in January. It's already going. Right out of the gate, Trump gets elected, and nothing happens between South Africa and U.S. for the most part. Hey, congratulations. Yeah. And then we get into January, and one of the first things that happens in January is politically, we're talking about here, there's lots of domestic issues, but politically is that at Davos, President Ramaphosa signs the Expropriation Without Compensation Act, except he didn't. He'd already signed it 34 days prior in South Africa. Funny thing, by waiting 30 days and not announcing it publicly, he avoids the period when one-third of the members of parliament can contest this. If they have one-third of signatures on any bill, it can go immediately to the Supreme Court or the Constitutional Court for constitutional review, and the court can override it. So interesting note that most people don't know about Southern politics, but the thing is that he signs it at Davos, and that abrogates property rights. Well, that's a problem. That's a problem for so many reasons. That's where it all starts out right there. It all goes downhill from there. Then Trump decides, because South Africa is not going to respect property rights, which is part of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, South Africa is a signatory to it. It's also a direct violation of Section 25 of the South African Constitution. And more importantly, from U.S. perspective, because we do have a dog in this fight when it comes to South Africans, is that South Africa is a voluntary participant in the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, which requires respect for private property rights. By taking them away with nil compensation, and I'm sorry, Dean McPherson, nil means zero. It doesn't mean you get something. I know you want to convince us that, but that's not the case. Nil means zero. By taking people's property away without compensation, this is a serious problem. And so Trump suspends foreign aid to South Africa in early February, February 2nd. And then South African politicians start saying that they try to insult Trump by saying he's poorly informed. 19 intelligence agencies, you know, he's poorly informed. He doesn't know what he's talking about. They try to take a soft approach, like, well, it's not really Trump's fault. He's dumb. That's essentially the gist of it. And then that doesn't work. And over time, they just start attacking Trump. And it goes downhill from there. And Trump then announces a executive order for creating a path for refugees to leave South Africa and come to America. And from there on, it's just insults. And it's across the board. It's not just ANC politicians. It's the media in South Africa. It's social media pundits. It's political commentators in South Africa. And it's even the Democratic Alliance, Yvonne Meyer. And also John Steenhuisen have repeatedly taken digs and insulted the United States. I mean, and for Steenhuisen, this is particularly shocking. The man was invited to the White House. And so was Ramaphosa and Ntshavheni, all of whom now insult President Trump repeatedly. But Steenhuisen is there. And I remember, because I couldn't have missed it, because President Ramaphosa told Donald Trump, "Have you met my white agriculture minister?" I remember that clearly. So we found out that John Steenhuisen was white. I didn't know that until that moment.
Continue. That was only the beginning.
Yeah, so it just goes on and on. Of course, this was supposed to be a big year for South Africa. The G20, which is supposed to be a grouping of the 20 largest economies in the world, but South Africa is the 39th largest economy in the world. So they're not really in the top 20, but they were invited in when this thing was founded. So they have, it's supposed to be a big year, and this is going to be a huge event, and it's a chance for Ramaphosa to be on the world stage to show that he's this diplomat. Of course, he tried that early in the year by having this fantastic diplomatic mission to go to Russia and Ukraine to negotiate a peace agreement, except that it didn't go very well. They flew into Poland en route, and the diplomatic note mentioned a few people coming and clearance for them and a couple sidearms, you know, security detail. They show up with crews, serve weapons, and I don't know the exact number, but the press reports something like 70 people on the plane, none of whom were sent ahead. When you send diplomats, you have a diplomatic mission, you have to do a diplomatic note, you have to get country clearance. It's not like a tourist just flying in, you know, it's very different. And they came there, and the Poles were like, "You're not bringing an army into our country. No, that's not going to happen." And then, of course, the senior police official was present for the security detail. Then he resorts to, "Well, it's racist. It's not a good look. It wasn't racist. It's that you violate international norms, which the South African government does on a habitual basis while they claim everyone else doesn't." So that was really a bad note early in the year too. But South Africa's big year in the G20 was supposed to be exactly that. But throughout the year, the officials in South Africa, when U.S. officials went there, it was clear that U.S. wasn't going to agree with the agenda that South Africa was coming up with. The agenda that South Africa wanted, because the purpose of G20 is to coordinate economic activity amongst the largest economies in the world and reduce barriers wherever possible so that things flow smoothly in commerce. Well, the South African government decided, well, it's our chance to turn this into, let's get debt relief and let's get, you know, the just energy transition so we can get people to give money to the global South, and let's blame the global North, which is mostly who the G20 is. and we're going to do that. That the U.S. officials went there, and even before Trump, that was not the approach that they're interested in, because that's not the focus. So these meetings on the sidelines, you have the Sherpa meetings, and then you have these other meetings take place throughout the year. In these meetings, U.S. officials and other countries yet to be identified, but I believe Argentina is one and possibly a couple others, but officials went to these meetings and they said, well, what about this? And the South African officials shut them down. No, we're in charge. We're going to run this thing our way. And so the South African officials publicly talking about consensus and cordial relations when they're diplomatically being disrespectful to people who've gone there. In addition to that, when the U.S. officials have proposed something, they didn't like it. For whatever reason, they outed the officials, said who they were, and mentioned them in the press, which was highly inappropriate. And so because of the expropriation of compensation, then the response from South Africa's government, President Trump early on says, I don't know if I'm going to the G20. About February, he's like, I'm not sure I'm going. Then the announcement was Vice President Vance would go in his place, but Marco Rubio also said, I'm not going to go. And then throughout the year, we had these tiffs back and forth. And in the end, just before the conference took place, more bad behavior from a U.S. perspective by the South African government. And Trump says, you know what, we're not going. We're not going to be there at all. And then, of course, during the whole event, we have Ronald LaMolla appearing on a CNN documentary, Misinformation, White Genocide, which is a theme that the ANC, the DA, and the media have brought up all year long. Trump said this phrase a couple of times this year, but always in response to a question posed by a reporter. You know, he's called on the tarmac. What about white genocide in South Africa? And he said, bad things are happening there. And press keep needling about it. He did really take a position on that. He said that, you know, that farmers are being killed. He did say that. But the term genocide, which is a red herring, in my view, for the press and for the government to use as a cudgel against their opponents to discredit them, is something that's been going on and on this year. Finally, Trump had enough of it late in the year, and he said, it's a genocide. So now Trump is saying it. He's on record as saying it's a genocide. And of course, there are different stages of genocide, so we could have a philosophical discussion about that. But the bottom line is that South Africa's relations, this was supposed to be a shining year for South Africa, and they want to blame it all on the relationship with the U.S. and blame Donald Trump for it. But this problem predates Trump by about 20 years. It wasn't Trump that was there when South Africa started doing things against the interests of the United States. And look, South Africa is a sovereign nation. But when you're a sovereign nation and you do things that harm our national interests, you shouldn't expect us to give you $500 million in handouts every year. That's a pretty unrealistic expectation. So the year ends, in my view, on a sour note. Of course, the press in South Africa, good little lapdogs are running around talking about what a great situation it's been. The G20 was a great success. Of course, South Africa violated all diplomatic norms, all G20 standards by introducing a consensus resolution at the beginning of the conference in the end, which is not how it's done. It's done at the end. After you've met, you decide, but they'd already put it all together and they called a consensus, but two member states refused to sign. The U.S. wasn't present and Argentina refused to sign, and they still drove ahead anyway. And throughout the course of that week, we see Ramaphosa mocking President Trump openly. You know, he goes on with this gentleman and he says, yeah, the gentleman says, bad things are happening in South Africa, ha ha, which obviously is a reference to Trump's comments about that. And then Ramaphosa just cackles and laughs. And not only is this caught on film, it's intentionally caught on film. And the government information service is the one to post it on TikTok. So it's clearly intentional, an effort to insult Trump. To what end, one has to wonder. Because South Africa is not getting the support that it needs from BRICS or other locations. The only country that seems to be really standing up for South Africa at the moment is Germany, oddly. Germany is taking a strange position. Its ambassador, also its government, taking opposition. But in the end, because of the way the events unfolded, Trump announces that South Africa will not be welcome at the G20 in 2026. Well, how is that possible? Because the U.S. is hosting it. And then, of course, the immediate response is, they can't do that. They can't keep us out. Well, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, they can, because in order to be present, you have to have a visa. You have to have diplomatic note, and they can simply refuse it. Now, you can play tit for tat and deny our diplomats, but the point is that they can keep you out, and that's exactly what's happening. Monday is the first meeting for the G20 for this year. It's in Washington, D.C., and South Africa will not be there, but Poland will be there. Look, we could spend hours just talking about the slights here. Yes, the U.S. has done some things that irritate South Africa. I mean, cutting off foreign aid just like that was a bit heartless, in my view. I mean, we should have said, you know what, unless you take a look at this expropriation of compensation, we're going to take our foreign aid away. You've got till the end of this fiscal year. But anyway, they did that. So, I mean, look, there's a little bit on both sides. Not like the United States is completely blameless here, but most of this is coming from the ANC and their junior partners, the DA in the government.
Now, Colonel, if you were invited to give another briefing to the National Security Council in coming days, what on South Africa, what would you be saying?
Wow, gosh, I imagine if I went to see the National Security Council in the next couple of days, what would I tell them? I would tell them specifically that what you're hearing and what you're being briefed is the truth. There are real problems in South Africa. Its economy is in tatters. It's not growing fast enough. It's far too slow. And the corruption is a real issue here. My recommendation would be is to find someone that can convivially talk to the senior officials in the African National Congress to get this thing going. Because, I mean, I didn't mention diplomatic things that have happened here, and we've kind of looked past that. You know, Ibrahim Rasool openly in a public forum recorded calls America racist and calls Donald Trump the leader of a global white supremacy. Now, you call Donald Trump a racist. You can't back it up, but you can call him that. But how do you call the leader of a global white supremacy? I mean, what's the name of the group? Is it the coffee club on Tuesdays? You know, what is this group that he's in charge of? That was intentional provocation. And then, of course, people forget that the consul general in Los Angeles was also kicked out of the country. That was forgotten about this year. And South Africa's military attaché was recalled from D.C. That was internally. I don't know what that was for, but it wasn't a good look. So I would tell them that we need somebody to talk to these folks. In addition, the people who have been willing to come to America and talk to America have been demonized in South Africa. And I would tell them that while you can continue to talk to those folks, you need to talk to some other groups that have influence. COSATU is one group that talks to D.C. Historically, the COSATU folks have come over, they've talked to the Democrats who are sympathetic to unions. And they've talked to, because a lot of people at COSATU presume that the Black Congressional Caucus would be friendly to them. It has been in the past. But they rudely found out in the past 2 years that when they come to D.C., no one wants to talk to them anymore because people are angry at South Africa. And it's not just Republicans. It's not Trump. Trump wasn't in office. It was the Biden administration when all this stuff started in the past 2 years. So my advice to them would be that they need to look very carefully at this. But also, frankly, I mean, I don't have any political power here, but if I were in charge, and I hate to hurt South Africans, but there's discussion right now about bringing back AGOA, the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, for 1 to 3 years, to help African economies. But my view on that is, aside from South Africa, if you're going to bring that back, for once, we need to hold African countries to the standards they agree to. Almost no African country meets the standards on governance and protecting liberty and providing educational and medical services for their population that they agree to do voluntarily. So we've looked the other way. Oh, it's okay. Yeah, they've signed it. And especially for South Africa, we looked the other way when it had expropriation on the competition. But my view would be that if they bring it back, they intentionally exclude South Africa. And message needs to be sent. That is a program. You know, we get this, then this is frustrating for me, Chris, because the whole year we get South African politicians attacking the U.S. and saying it's unfair. And it's nonsense when the tariffs were imposed. Oh, look, they're attacking South Africa. Did you miss the other 89 countries that got tariffs? You weren't singled out. It wasn't you. And it's called reciprocal for a reason. Yes, but we've looked at it and a fair tariff was 7.5. Really? Okay. So how do you calculate the fact that you exclude our pork from your marketplace? You won't let it in. There's nothing wrong with our pork. It's world class. People buy it all over the world. But you won't let us ship our pork there because it endangers your domestic industry. That's why you have protectionist measures. But you won't admit that. You also have quotas on automobiles. We only ship X number of Cadillacs or Jeeps to South Africa. But the Chinese are flooding your market. They have no restrictions. And then because we impose tariffs, you take it personally. Well, we take it personally because you've been unfair to us. You know, it's a crazy year. This has been I think you and I were chatting privately, and we heard this, of course, in the UK about 20 years ago, Annus Horribus. I think that's what it's been in many respects for South Africa. And I think I'm getting a little off topic there, but because you get down a rabbit hole with this stuff. But look, I would tell them if I went to the council that I would be very much in favor, if I had any political power, of excluding South Africa and being very vocal about it and laying out the reasons why. South Africa has abrogated private property rights. South Africa has misled its population. South Africa gives fraudulent criminal statistics, then downplays the severity of crime in South Africa. You know, I just lay it out and say that look, this is all true. But that doesn't mean South Africa is bad. It doesn't mean we don't want to work with South Africa. We'd love to work with South Africa. We got lots of capital. We'd like to invest in South Africa. You know, the world is making deals with America. $20 trillion of foreign direct investment coming into America. Just committed in 10 months under the Trump administration. No one's ever seen anything like this. So we'd like to do the same thing in places like South Africa. There's lots of chance for development there. But it can't be done when American companies are forced to give up 30% of their equity to someone simply because of their skin color. And that's not how we do business. That's racist. Anyway, so now I would tell them that they need to try to find a way to talk to South Africans. But quite frankly, Chris, the South African government keeps telling me that they're talking with Americans. Who? There's no ambassador. There is no trade representative. There's no trade delegation. Who is talking to the Americans? At what level? You know, this is crazy. You need a senior person with gravitas. Look, I mean, I'm not in favor or against, but I mean, somebody maybe like Tony Leon. Appoint Tony Leon to be a trade representative. May not be a trade guy, but he knows how to talk to people. He's been a diplomat. He formed a political party. He's kind of balanced. You know, he's also, you know, he's I don't want to say he's past it, but he's old enough that he doesn't have a dog in the fight that he wants to compete for something. You know, the government, South Africa, is misled the public, too. You know, well, the relationship we're working on, we've appointed a special envoy. Who's your special envoy? In Kibisi Jonas. Oh, yeah, that's the guy that called America racist and Trump racist a couple years ago, too. But he was in an official position like an ambassador. So, OK, that's his opinion. We can accept that. But how many trips has he made to D.C.? Zero. And for the year, they insisted he was the envoy, special envoy. That's what they called him. That's what Ramaphosa, he's their special envoy. An envoy goes place. That's where the word comes from. You have to go somewhere. And Kibisi Jones has never been to America's special envoy. It turns out he's just an advisor to President Ramaphosa on America. And that's fine. But why don't you just tell people the truth?
Chris, what about sanctions? It worked before.
Well, there's a lot of talk about that. And that's one thing that frustrates me throughout the years. South Africa, you know, there was a academic earlier this year when a Newsroom African claimed that America had put sanctions on South Africa. And I argued against it. I made some content and said, that's not true. There's no sanctions in South Africa. We don't have to give you money. That's out of the kindness of our heart. You know, taking away foreign aid is not sanctions. We've got debts too. So what about sanctions? Well, in last year in 2024, a bipartisan group in the House of Representatives under the Biden administration put together a bill to review the strategic relationship with South Africa vis-a-vis the United States, because a lot of politicians in Congress were angry about what's been happening to our interest in what South Africa has been doing, you know, butting up to Hamas with Tehran, you know, publicly speaking out against the United States. We've done nothing to South Africa. And this whole vaccine apartheid narrative that Ramaphosa ran a couple of years ago really doesn't sit well with a lot of people, because it was nonsense. It was all race pandering. So that bill came forward and it never got out of committee. But the corollary to that was that after an investigation into the relationship, the idea would be if there's something bad that we would start sanctioning senior ANC officials. Now, remember, this before the Government National Union was formed. So it wasn't anyone else, just it was ANC. That bill kind of sat, it's still there. It sits in Congress. It's gone nowhere. And then this year, the new Congress comes in after the elections in 2024. And we have two Republicans, James in Michigan, and then Ronny Jackson in Texas, the former personal physician to Barack Obama and to Donald Trump when he was still president the first time. He is now a Texas congressman. He introduces a bill, exact same bill, almost the same word. It's almost like he, you know, cut and pasted. And they put that in, and that gets a lot of attention because the South African media gloms on and goes, sanctions. No, there's no sanctions. Talking about, you know, travel restrictions and punishment for officials who are causing these problems. Anyway, that bill gets out of committee in July, and then the media covers it again. And they keep talking about the sanctions. There are no sanctions. The bill has to be proposed, has to go through committee. If it gets through committee, that goes on the floor, and it can be debated at any time, or it can't be debated. So that's been there since July. It hasn't come up for a vote or a discussion. So it's sitting there. In the meantime, in the Senate, because the Senate can also introduce bills, Senator John Kennedy, a very well-known and colorful senator from Louisiana, says that he's doing the same thing. So he came up with a bill, and he's the one who spoke this week about, you know, keeping South Africa out of a new GOA. So those bills are out there, and both talk about sanctions against ANC leaders, but not against the country, not against the country. And the tariffs are not a sanction. I mean, from the U.S. point of view, we're being treated unfairly. Now, South Africa can disagree with that, can argue with that, and that's a fair conversation to have. But it's unfair to say that it's a sanction. We can't ship our pork there. We can only send so many cars. We have all these unofficial barriers. In fact, we just heard U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer testify in the Senate. That's exactly the problem with South Africa. They have all these barriers that don't let us get goods and services in the country. But at the same time, for 25 years, Chris, we have allowed South African goods and services to come into our country without duty. Now, how is that fair? You know, we did that because we were hoping to help South Africa grow, and it did. It helped the automobile industry. It helped your wine industry, helped your agriculture sector and other parts of the economy. But, you know, we're being taken for chumps from the U.S. perspective, and it's not going to happen anymore.
In conclusion, Chris, I don't think the African National Congress would want any advice from you, but give it anyway.
Well, I've been trying to offer advice throughout the year. I do know that some people in the ANC watch my program, and thank you for that. I appreciate the viewership. But I've been trying to give advice all year. First off, look, if you know anything about Donald Trump, look, when it comes down to politics, it's all personal at some point. You know, their personalities are human beings involved, and you have to know how to interact with people. And the approach they've taken with Donald Trump is one they think that, well, we'll curry favor around the world, particularly with the socialists of the world, if we just stand up to Trump. Well, there's no reason to stand up to Trump. Why don't you work with Trump? You know, we just saw the president of the DRC, Tshisekedi, and the president of Rwanda, Kagame, go there. Now, the peace treaty probably won't hold up because it's the Congo. We know that's going to happen. But the two of them are there, and they're talking to Trump, and then they're working with him, and they signed an agreement, a historic agreement, and they've got the U.S. to commit to do capital investment, foreign direct investment, to help them build their mineral sector. You know, that's a much better approach. So my advice to the ANC would be stop insulting Trump, stop misleading the public. You know, you don't have to focus on the things that you've done that are wrong, but you can certainly have a different approach to this. But it's just, the list goes on. This campaign against Trump is Grady Montasha. If they don't give us the aid, we won't give them the minerals. Hey, we buy the minerals. You don't want to sell them to us, we'll buy them for somebody else, you know? And if we can't get, if it's a mineral only you have, which is very few things, we'll buy from a third party. What are you talking about? Anyway, and then Paul Mashatile, and then Crispin Peary insulting America, Vincent Magwenya insulting America, Cyril Ramaphosa mocking President Trump insulting America, and Ronald Lamola going on that documentary from CNN and calling Donald Trump a white supremacist, which wasn't the first time he did this year. You know, and of course, this, you know, Cyril Pose has been antagonistic towards Trump since the beginning. Remember back in 2018, I don't know what Donald Trump knows about South Africa, but he can keep his America. We'll keep our South Africa, playing for a populist crowd. What I would suggest to ANC officials is stop playing for a populist crowd. If you want to stay in power, you need to come up with service delivery. You need to get rid of corruption. You need to be serious about governance, which they're not. They let their party ossify and rot. So that's my advice to them is fix your domestic, clean up your internal house, and stop insulting Trump in America and actually send a delegation. Why are we waiting for an ambassador to America? At this point, it's not because they can't find somebody that's qualified. It's because they have no interest in it. That's the message to DC. There are people in the Congress. There are people in the National Security Council. There are people in the government administration of Trump who want to work with South Africa, not as an imperialist, as, you know, and Hitler, as Julius Malema seems to call America, but as a co-equal partner. But South Africa doesn't treat America like a co-equal partner. They're like the dog, not South Africans, but South Africa. They're like the dog that grabs you by the trouser and yaps. And my advice to them is stop yapping and start communicating. And, you know, I don't know if the ANC wants to listen. I doubt they do. At this point, I'm not even convinced a lot of people in that party even are legitimate people that want to govern. I mean, it's all about me, me, me. It's our turn to eat, and we're going to get as much and pillage as much as we can while we're here. And that's heartbreaking because it's South Africans that suffer. And that's a real tragedy. And it's really heartbreaking to see South Africans leaving South Africa. Never mind the refugee program. You got 82 South Africans abandoning South Africa every day on average. And this is my figure. That's from the government. They move abroad every day. And that's your human capital. You're being bled dry. Your nurses, your doctors, your lawyers, your businessmen, your teachers, your clinicians, they're all going abroad for various reasons. Crime being one of the biggest drivers. And then, of course, the racist policies that discriminate against everybody. But my advice to the ANC would be to tone down the rhetoric, actually send an ambassador, actually engage, and let's try to build this and stop. I mean, you know, when Ramaphosa went to the White House in May with his dog and pony show, and he's like, when they showed the Normandian protest, which everybody knows about, the crosses on the road representing those who were murdered on farms after Glenn and Vita Rafferty were murdered brutally. Everyone knows about it. Ramaphosa knows that. He turns to President Trump in front of that room, in front of a global audience, and says, Mr. President, I've never seen this before. Did they tell you where it's at? Trump was flabbergasted. I mean, his response was, well, it's in South Africa. You know, I mean, I know what he wanted to say after that, but he was diplomatic and didn't say that. But, you know, they need to stop that nonsense. They know what's going on in South Africa. They know that rural security is abysmal. They know that people, black, white, and brown on farms are targets, and they're being targeted by criminal syndicates, not just by opportunistic crimes. They know what's happening, and yet they want to play this game. Stop lying to people. Just be honest and just be, you know, maybe you can't be transparent, but, you know, take a different approach because the approach you're taking doesn't work and it's not going to work. And look, and all this talk about the U.S. attacking South Africa, the U.S. hasn't attacked South. You want to attack South Africa? There's a lot that could be done. You know, there's a lot that could be done to South Africa. And what the U.S. could do to South Africa today is far greater than sanctions, which you're alluding to back in the 1980s. So much more can be done. The world is so much more integrated, global trading with the SWIFT banking system and so many other things. If the U.S. wanted to hurt South Africa, we could crush the country overnight. That's not the goal of America, but that's what South African politicians keep telling everybody. Stop that. It's not helpful.
Thank you. That was U.S. intelligence analyst, retired Colonel Chris Wyatt, giving BizNews viewers an overview of South Africa's year domestically, on the continent, and internationally. Thank you for joining me, Christine, on the last NDB Sunday show of 2025.